Because
indeed, that's a stretch.
But indeed, that's sort of what the social Darwinists were actually arguing. They went back to him. But here's the other thing. I just, because again, look, you can reply to that, but also here's the other thing. He said, yeah, or Berlinsky's own phrase, that Darwinism was necessary but not sufficient. Now, you know what? That almost sounds like it's attributing some significant level of proper measured responsibility where it should be. But seriously, shouldn't the serious blame in any discussion of something like the Holocaust, where you killed 6 million Jews and however many millions of other people, where that many people were involved, isn't it a grotesque offense against human dignity not to blame the sufficient causes for it? The ones that actually caused the Holocaust, as opposed to, let me name some other things that were probably necessary. If we're going to name Darwin, it was necessary to have roads. It was necessary to have trains. It was necessary for there to be a chemical industry that could manufacture poison gas. It was necessary for everything that happened in World War I to set up the horrible events in the Weimar Republic that led to World War II. Weren't all of those necessary but not necessarily sufficient? How come you're going to pick on Darwin and blame him for the Holocaust?
My, we're upset.
My, we just heard someone blamed for millions of people dying.
Look, you need to have some courtesy, common courtesy. I am here.
Courtesy went out the window when they decided to pin Charles Darwin with the death of 6 million Jews.
I don't believe that case is made. I think we qualify that case. And I think that you are reaching when you're starting to talk about trains and insecticides. Come on.
Ideas,
these are philosophies. You can't carry out these ideas unless you have an embedded materialist philosophy, and you can't do this state-sponsored. How do you do it if you have some other idea, some other respect for any transcendental idea out there? You have to, this is something that is a necessary component, and I think the examples that you bring are if the right word is, they're, you know, you could do that, you could make that case with anything. Where, you know, well, here, what causes this? Well, you can't get there if you don't have a road to get there. Come on.
I'm making a specific point of, if you're going to say what is responsible for the Holocaust, I say we blame the Nazis and Hitler. I'm pretty sure you'd have a hard time driving some sort of space between that argument.
I would say that you have a society that allowed it to happen.
Let me just add one point about evolution in this context, which is, if you read the 2000 article in our magazine by Ernst Mayr, a great evolutionary biologist, called Darwin's Influence on Modern Thought, he points out how the eugenics movement and Hitler's Holocaust and racism in general is a misreading of Darwin. Because what Darwin did was do away with what's called typology, where all Jews are the same, all black people are the same, all Asian people are the same, and replaced it with variation, where all humans exist together in a variable context. And so typology, which says everybody of that group can be treated the same way, is a misreading of Darwin. It's an incorrect interpretation of Darwin. And all of social Darwinism can pretty much be pinned on that misreading.
I would say that that's a scientist's point of view. I would be eager to read that point of view, and then I would say that there are other scientists who have a different point of view. I wouldn't claim to be educated on it enough to say,
fine,
you know.
Those other scientists, however, are incorrect.
Well, that's, yeah.
Look, I'm I think I've said about everything I have to say about all this. Anybody else have any other questions or comments they want to make to Mark, who has been good enough to stay here and answer all of these questions and not get back to his family in this time?
I had a couple, but if anybody else has any, I'll run over with the microphone.
Basically, just one comment, and I guess I don't want to bring back the whole Darwin and the Holocaust.
This is Phil Yam, by the way.
But, I mean, you can make the same argument with religion. I mean, without religion was insufficient but necessary for the conquistadors, for the Crusades, for 9/11. I mean, you can pretty much say that about anything.
I think you could, when you look at societies, you can misappropriate for any number of things. And certainly religion has been misappropriated to commit some horrific acts. But when you look at societies that embrace a materialist philosophy, you start stacking up some pretty big numbers. You start looking at Nazi Germany, Pol Pot, Stalin. These are some pretty weighty numbers on that side of the ledger. And so I think that certainly deserves consideration.
And overall, the religion is probably...
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I would not agree to that one.
Let me go somewhere else.
I actually agree with Mark on just the statistical numbers for Stalin, Hitler versus the Crusade.
Yes, you had a couple of real overachievers in that area. There's no question.
Who were blessed with wonderful technology.
That's right.
Still, wonderful killing technology. I just wanted to bring up the Dover trial is presented briefly in the film, mm-hmm. and it's presented as a decision about science,
right.
when in fact the decision is about the First Amendment rights of people in the community not to have religion preferentially, a particular religious view, given a preferential standing in a public school classroom. Okay, just wanted to get that out.
I have to go back to my original question. You're comfortable with the level of truthfulness as it presents the Dover trial.
The Dover trial, first of all, you want to start talking about integrity with the Dover trial?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You've got a judge who lays down a decision, 92.5%, something like that, of which is written by the ACLU. He didn't even do his own work. He just copied and pasted.
Where do you have this that the ACLU actually wrote the decision?
What the ACLU wrote was incorporated, copied and pasted directly into the decision.
Well, if that's true, and I don't know that's true, but I'll stipulate to you that it's true. I would argue that the judge, a conservative Republican appointed by George W. Bush,
you can roll that
was
out all you
convinced
want.
By those arguments and therefore went with them.
I've heard that argument rolled out many times, and there's certainly people on both sides of the political spectrum who lie in wait, who get appointed by a liberal, gets appointed by a conservative gets appointed by a liberal. Look, this guy, anybody who is as you portray him, a staunch George Bush appointed, he was conservative minded,
church going
guy.
But he was actually a liberal activist in disguise.
I'm saying when anybody who would fit that profile, and then copy and paste, not even edit, not even put his own stuff, but copy and paste 92% of it. 92%.
Where do you get that statistic from? I'm honest, I just don't know. Yeah. So I would like to follow up on that.
Yeah.
So where do you have that statistic from?
I read this in Darwin Day in America by John West, a Discovery Institute fellow. He's got the data, and it's footnoted.
Because I have to
pages.
Tell you, I covered the trial. I attended the trial.
Yeah.
I paid close attention to the transcripts of the trial.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ACLU was not the primary prosecuting law body.
Well,
that was
you're going to know
Pepper Hamilton out of Philadelphia.
You're going to know much more about the trial than I am, since you're intimately involved and I was not.
Uh-huh.
What I do know and my source for the information is John West's book, Darwin Day in America.
Okay, well, we'll check
copy
that out because I got to tell you, I don't believe it.
Yeah, but, you know, actually, I have to say, this is all actually irrelevant to the presentation of the film, of the Dover trial as it comes up in the film.
It was so brief, and it wasn't even hard. I mean, unless you were familiar.
Here's the point, though, of how I think the film misuses it. What Ben's, the quote is, after the ACLU is shown, you know, pointing out that it's very was it ACLU or whoever was shown on film?
They showed who was, according to the Chyron, it was an ACLU attorney.
Okay, so
but the lead attorneys were Pepper Hamilton.
Okay, so there was an attorney shown who was you know, saying that it had been a colossal waste of time to have had to have this trial because it pointed out something that was already known. Ben was saying, I thought science was decided by evidence, not courts. Now here's the thing: what bothers me is that the way that this is used, it makes it sound as though the science of evolution was somehow being determined by a court case, as though this were some sort of some sort of communist state. We were deciding the science by official diktat. And yet that is not what the case was about. It's what Steve was talking about. The case was about. It was specifically about how the law with respect to certain First Amendment issues would be administered. It misuses the case. It misuses how the case is used.
I think this is a case that you're splitting some hairs here.
I'm not splitting hairs.
This whole trial was used as a mechanism by which anybody who favors an intelligent design perspective has been demeaned, and that's what it's been used as a tool to say the courts have ruled on this, and oh my goodness, a George Bush appointed guy.
What did the courts rule on in the case? What was the effect of that decision in that case? What did they rule in that case, since you said that's what they ruled on?
What I'm telling you is it doesn't even matter. What matters is...
Do you really know, Mark? Tell me that you know.
That I know with the Dover case.
Yes, tell me what was determined in the Dover case so that I know when you are dismissing my arguments that I know what you're dismissing.
Okay. It's this, the ruling itself. Now, and also keep in mind before I answer this, you're talking to the associate producer who did not post-production put the film together?
No, but who was involved in all of the research about the film and making the arguments?
I was involved in doing interviews and setting up interviews.
Moments ago, you said you were comfortable with the state of truthfulness of the representation of the Dover trial in the film. So I'm just going back to the question of why you are so comfortable with that.
The Dover trial is as I had mentioned, this is something that is used, the ruling is used as a tool to say, ID is not science.
What was the ruling, though?
Specifically, I can't lay it out for you. Now, okay. What I could, as you said, that it had to do with this particular religious belief. And in the case of the Dover trial, it was not something that I believe represented what's going on in this nation as a whole, but that this was a very specific situation in Dover, Pennsylvania, where you had specific people with specific motivations, that they read into it that the intent, what's the intent of these people, which I thought was pretty amazing. Look, we've got courts that are now measuring intent of the people and what they're doing in the school board.
Intent. That informed the decision, but the decision was specifically that the construct of intelligent design was a religious construct and therefore would be a violation of the First Amendment separation of church and state, establishment clause, establishment of a religion, to teach it in a public school classroom.
Yeah, do you think atheism's a religion?
Wait a minute. No. That's the decision.
Really?
That's the decision. The decision is you cannot teach intelligent design in a public school science classroom. Yeah. You can teach it in a social studies classroom.
And what specific religion did it endorse?
It endorsed a particular view of Christianity.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so this is what Judge Jones
That's
rules.
That's correct. That's okay. Judge Jones'
yeah,
ruling.
And so when you look at the people who, if you talk to the Discovery Institute, that would be the place to go on this, because they're the ones who are, that's the hub of intelligent design. And you look at the Discovery Institute.
But that's not the hub of intelligent design science, because there is no hub of intelligent design science. That's the hub of intelligent design
advocacy.
Publicity and advocacy.
Okay.
When it came down to actually...
You've made your point. I get your view.
Okay.
You've got your position. I understand it. Okay? I know exactly where you're coming from.
Now, just curious. This is tangential. Have you determined that Judge Jones is a wolf in sheep's clothing because of the decision?
What I read in the decision and what I read of the decision, mm-hmm. okay, and what I saw of it, and certainly, you know, nowhere near your level of expertise on this, because I didn't cover it like
mm-hmm.
you did.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have judges who are lifting, who are being praised for their great eloquence in their decision, and that 92%.
Who's praising him?
He was heavily praised by the press. The press, the scientific community, heavily praised for this wonderful, eloquent decision. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, Steve has praised him.
I've praised him.
And you're
praising. None of us have praised him.
Right. You're praising the ACLU.
It is
because
no,
92% of it was 92% of his of what he wrote up came directly from the ACLU without edit.
Well, we're going to check that out.
Please do.
Because so far you don't know that. You're a secondary source on that.
I am a secondary source.
You're saying that, who was it again, West?
John West.
John West of the Discovery Institute.
Of the Discovery Institute.
Makes that claim in a book.
In a book called Darwin Day in America.
Okay.
So, look, I mean, there are only so many hours in the day where you can read books, and I've read a great number of them on this subject. With any research, there's a certain level of trust here where you count on that, you know, especially when you read in books that have 150 pages of footnotes, that, you know, believe me, if somebody from the Discovery Institute says something like that in a book and it's not right, oh my gosh, they will be shredded.
Well, that's only if anybody actually reads the book.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm very familiar with where you're coming from.
Okay.
So you don't need to. You can stop beating that horse.
I'm not attacking you on that. I just had never heard that claim before, so I just want to know where it comes from.
That's
so that
interesting.
I can independently verify it.
I'll be very interested if when you do independently verify mm-hmm. it, if in fact that's the case, uh-huh. why it is you didn't know that.
Okay. If it turns out that it's true, then we'll get into why it is we didn't know it.
Because that seems to me to be a pretty important point.
When why exactly?
Oh, come on. I think when you have a judge who's supposed to be laying down an impartial ruling that's of his own weighing of the evidence, and yet 92-point-something% of his decision.
So your argument is that the fact that
I'm saying if I was a judge, I would make it my decision. I would write the doggone decision. That's what I'm saying.
What we'll also do, okay, look, we're talking about something that needs to be established. So we're going to do two things. We're going to find out if that number is actually accurate, the 92%. And then we're going to find out, we're going to ask other judges how much actual text in any given decision is lifted verbatim from the trial transcripts. Because that may be what's going on as well.
Your
trial transcripts and other documents that may be submitted into evidence in the course of a trial.
Exactly. I mean, as I recall the judge's decision,
might be standard practice in long.
It's possible. Now, I've read the judge's decision.
Check it out.
At least twice. I've read it twice, all the way through, and pieces of it again. And it is heavily laden with quotes from trial transcripts. So, you know, the numbers may come out a certain way based on that method of attribution rather than it was written by somebody else.
Okay,
for him.
So now.
Anyway.
It is 6 after 6:40, and I would rather not spend time. We could debate minor points and side issues for quite some time here. If we've got something big, I'm happy to answer that and go in that direction. But if not, it's been a very long day for me. I'd like to go.
Well, we're not keeping you prisoner.
I certainly understand that. Does anybody else see a reason to continue to ask Mark questions? If not, okay. We appreciate you bringing it in.
I would say that we would wish you well with the film, but who are we kidding? But again, I do appreciate the courage or whatever else it took that you decided to actually come in and personally screen this in our office. I do appreciate that.
There are people out there who make accusations about the people who put this film together and the courage that they won't, you know, look, I'll come right to the Scientific American, show you the film, and let you come after me, and I'll give you the best answers I've got. I'm not hiding anywhere, okay? So I appreciate your passion. I have a point of view that you disagree with, and that point of view is that when you look at something like evolutionary biology, and when you have very significant hurdles that are real head scratchers, where does information come from? Okay, how did the cosmos and the Earth and its atmosphere, how did all of these things become so finely tuned that life is possible? How, through a process of mutation, which, from what I understand, genetic mutations, the evidence demonstrates these mutations destroy information. They don't build information. So yet Darwin's theory posits that we're going to build all information from this. But yet we've got a mechanism that destroys information.
Yeah,
we've got speciation problems. We've got symbiosis problems. We've got, and I'm not a scientist, but I'm looking at this as a logical, analytical person. And my point is this. When there are this many significant challenges to a theory, okay, I don't say that, and look, obviously I'm reaching beyond very specific Darwinism, but I must say, I think it's intellectually dishonest to have a theory about life and you don't talk about how you get to a cell. Okay, I just have a problem with that personally. But I think that to systematically exclude an idea that says, let's work on the science. Let's figure out, can we scientifically identify design? I don't agree with you. I haven't had the years to study the attacks. Well, not years, because these have been fairly recent on Michael Behe's analogy. I can tell you the one that I saw from Ken Miller is pretty lame. You know, oh, here's a mousetrap. It's going to be a tie clip. Oh, come on. Let's talk real science here, okay? I don't think that the attacks on Behe's argument have been all that compelling. You obviously disagree. What I'm saying is this. Come on. What's the big problem? Why can't we simply say, look, allow research to go in on this program. Let these people fall on their face if you're so convinced that's going to happen. Come on.
You know, this is I am half glad and half sorry that you just made the closing statement that you did, because it kind of undercut a certain level of whatever respect I'd started to develop for you in all this, wait a minute, Mark, please hear me out on this. You just recited a beautiful summary of the standard ID cant about what we think is wrong with evolution and how science is blind to what that we could possibly add to this.
Well, why would I not have that information? If I've taken the time to examine the issues, why wouldn't
I? You haven't taken the time to examine the issues. That's the problem. Right. Every time we've asked this, you've infused to engage the arguments. You go into a lot of this hand, the other hand. I wish you had made a film that had actually engaged with some of the science that you just brought up and the issues of, are there holes like this in what the science has? Because that would have been a really valuable film to have out there. And you would have then seen that the science actually has far better answers than you apparently are even aware is out there. Mm-hmm. So You know, I think it's too bad that what we have here is a film that's really interested in trying to just have this basically an assault against a materialist worldview. And that what this really is a film that is not against evolution. This is a film that is against anything except a religious view of society, and that anything else is seen as too dangerous, and that it takes it that religion has to be so pervasive that it resents the fact that science just tries to push a program of pure empirical experimentation and inquiry.
Well, maybe you want to say something?
It's funny. I'm here to answer questions, but I'm getting a sermon. I mean, you've spent more time talking than I have.
Oh, I can't believe that's true.
Ooh, I can.
Well, we can also we have data. We can actually analyze that,
right.
And we can post the answers.
We can use the scientific method.
I was going to just finish by saying that a lot of the answers to some of the outstanding questions that you had there that you were listening to at the end can be found every month in the pages of Scientific American, ladies and gentlemen. And with that, we can let you go. I know you want to get out of here.
Well, one of the questions that I've asked people and many different kinds of people in different venues is, okay, the broad claim, the big fear that's rolled out is exactly what we see in the film and what we see in other places is that, look, what's the wedge document? What's really going on here? What's really going on here is this is an effort to get religion into the schools. That's what's really going on here. And I ask the question of people from the spectrum of atheists to just hardcore fundamentalists, okay? I ask that question. And you know what? Would you like a science teacher or a university professor teaching you or your children about religion, about theology? Would you want that taught by a high school or university professor, science teacher? And the answer, that this is one of the very few areas that I think you can have virtually universal agreement, that from the atheist to the hardcore fundamentalist, they would say no. Because believe me, the atheist doesn't want to get anywhere near religion. The people who are agnostic don't want to be bothered with it. This is all too much passion for them. The people who are fundamentalist are going to say, look, all I want is I want evolutionary theory fully taught. Okay, I like this idea of design. I'd like to see it discussed. And we will take care of the theology part in our homes and in our churches. So this is the big earth shaker, the big problem. We're trying to backdoor religion. When, in fact, I can find no one who wants that.
Yeah. On the other hand, by the way, Mark, you keep saying you want to leave, and then you say something else like that. I mean, here's the thing. You know, it's very nice that you say that there is no effort to backdoor religion about this. You just want to be able to still have religion out there in society, and the right people are being taught about religion by the right people, and that's just great. If you look at the science, if you look at the journals, if you look at the content of the textbooks, there is shockingly little time that scientists like to spend actually saying in the middle of their scientific arguments, by the way, there's no God. That's the point. You're reading something into that. This is like saying, listen, this is like... give me a second. In the Islamic world, it's very common when people talk... Now who's being rude and disrespectful,
saying,
Mark?
Look, I'm just saying, you know, you've monopolized this discussion. Go ahead.
In the Islamic world, it's very common whenever one says a statement about certain kind of things that might happen in the future to commonly say inshallah, basically saying if Allah is willing. That would be a common view within a very religious social context. When we're watching a baseball game, there is very, very little time that is spent with the announcers and the players all commenting about the fact of, well, he's going to really, you know, try to knock in a home run, good Lord willing. You know, no one would feel that the game was particularly improved by bringing in more religious references. scientists are just making the point that there is no advantage in improving the science that comes from trying to bring in some sort of religious idea of a mysterious, unspecified, undefined designer who may or may not be God, because it doesn't help you develop good hypotheses that sharpen the science. That's what the argument is actually about. And that is what Ben Stein ignores in Expelled.
I don't agree with that.
What part of it don't you agree with?
Well, it's hard when it's such length here in your responses. The idea that, first of all, if all you teach is essentially can be boiled down to a materialist view, then you, by default, teach a religious position, because atheism actually is a religion. It's a set of beliefs.
Is it a materialist position that is anti-religious when engineers are taught about just about what the strength of different materials that will hold up a building are, since they don't acknowledge that, after all, the power of God could hold it up too?
I think it's a weak argument that you bring. You're bringing a specific, Muslim, religion into this.
I'm not bringing Muslim religion.
You just did.
I mentioned that as an example of the ways in which you can bring religious ideas into anything if you want to.
I just brought up a different case of engineering.
Deal with my engineering example.
Well, you've pushed it to a ridiculous point.
How have I made it ridiculous?
Nobody's.
You're dismissing. Nobody's making
that case, and we certainly don't make that kind of case.
Nobody makes that case because they know if they made that case, they would seem ridiculous. But they think that because when they deal with science and issues that genuinely are still under exploration that no one has answers for, they like to jump in and they like to be able to use those as a point where, well, maybe we can try to sneak God in on this. And there, somehow, it's not ridiculous.
No, I don't think you try to sneak God into it. I think you keep it scientific. And you say, these are scientific ideas that should be examined. When we don't know where information comes from, when it's difficult to understand through evolutionary biology exactly what happened, is it ridiculous to look at the evidence and say, can design be identified here? Why is that off the table?
It's not off the table if someone can develop a good argument and evidence to demonstrate why it belongs inside the discussion.
Right.
That's all. If one of these explanatory filters for being able to demonstrate design.
How do you do that when the establishment is absolutely owned and funded by people who believe passionately, as you do, when the establishment has a singular point of view? How do you get another point of view in the door when the people who are in charge, who have all the funding, who have all the power and prestige, are devoted to a singular view? How do you get another view in?
But see, that's a materialist view too, though. If it's all about God, then it would be an inside job. There's all this external projection into some sort of the establishment.
And there's not an external projection from the other side?
How do you mean?
What I mean is that you have everybody who comes at this evidence to pretend that you're somehow coming from this evidence from some kind of empirical scientific high ground, and that you're not impacted by your own biases. Both sides are. Come on.
I don't think that's...
You wouldn't walk into a barber shop and tell the barber to use a wrench instead of scissors.
I have no idea what you mean by that.
Really?
Yeah, really. No, it's a silly analogy. I don't understand it. So I'm not a scientist. I'm just a producer.
You're talking
here
about intellectual dishonesty earlier, and now that's what you always fall back on, is that I'm not a scientist, but I'm going to give you...
What do you mean, always fall? I've said that twice. Look, I didn't get your analogy, so spell it out for me.
You wouldn't walk into a context that's completely inappropriate to talk about certain things that just isn't part of the nature of its discussion and its way of doing things. I don't walk into a church and start telling the church how to run and operate things. It's, the Catholic Church is run and operated for thousands of years without my help.
Right.
I just honor the way of its traditions and its rites and its rituals, and I go with that. And it's something that works for me. Then when it comes to other areas of life, life is much more dynamic and diverse than that. When I walk into the world of scientists and see the world the way they see it and how they do things. They have their own procedures and way of doing things, and I don't go around trying to foist.
I hear what you're saying, and I see your point, and I don't think that's the case here. I think you've got scientists who are saying that this is the biggest question ever asked, and that there is reason to believe that you can approach this question using science and look for design. End of it. You know, it doesn't get into God. Now, it's there in the same way that on the other side, if you come at it from a strictly material perspective, that then takes you to a non-God. So both sides have this issue. And I think you just look as carefully as you can and allow these people to speak.
No one stops them from speaking. What happens is there
are a lot of people who disagree with that statement.
Well, you know, that's where we come back to testing cases, and we look at things like the Sternberg case, where it looks to me like you haven't actually done a very fair representation of the information in that instance.
All right, so we've covered that ground. You know what? It's 7 o'clock. I'm already a half hour past, and you're right. I keep saying I'm going to stop talking, and then I talk more.
Let me just get on the record. Do you have any objection to us airing this unedited? I wouldn't even presume to try to edit it on our podcast.
Mm-hmm. Do I have any objection to you airing it unedited?
Right, in its entirety.
Well, let me think about that for a minute, since I know what you're going to do with it.
I'm just telling you, I would say we saw, I'd probably wait until the film was available, then I would say we saw a screening, and then we had a discussion with the associate editor. And I wouldn't say anything other than that, and then just play this recording.
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
Fair enough. All right, if we're done, again, thank you, Mark, for taking the time to come in here and show the film and talk to us about all of this.
A couple of notes. At 63 minutes and 11 seconds, John Rennie was reacting to Mark Mathis, turning toward the rest of the editors and miming John, talking and gesticulating. One point that does require response, Mathis charged that some 92% of the judge's decision in the Dover Intelligent Design trial was copied directly from papers filed by the ACLU. We said we would follow up and find out the truth. We did. In fact, Mathis was wrong in three ways. One, even the Discovery Institute's own charge is that the judge copied 90.9% of ACLU material for one specific section in the judge's decision. Second, a correct statistical workup finds that the number is as low as 35%, depending on whether you include material filed that is not included in the decision and the length of word strings. But the most important point is one that I guessed at in the conversation. We spoke to actual legal experts who told us that when the sides in a trial file their facts, it is with the hope that they make the case strongly enough for the judge to incorporate their texts into the finding of facts section of the decision. Therefore, the charges that Mathis makes against Judge Jones are both incorrect in detail and spurious in spirit. For more information, you can go to footnote 88 in the Wikipedia entry on the Discovery Institute. There's more info on the permissibility of using filed facts in a decision at the Panda's Thumb website. That's pandasthumb.org. It's an entry called Weekend at Behe's, dated December 12th, 2006. More websites with information are posted on the text page that accompanies this podcast.